Hey, all you Holly weirdos. Let's take a trip back to several time periods, but one in particular, the 80s, and delve into the dark history of Sunset Strip. This iconic stretch of road in West Hollywood was once a hotspot for celebrities, rock stars, and partygoers alike. However, beneath the glamour and glitz lurked a seedy underbelly filled with crime, drugs, and debauchery. One of those said figures to be a part of this underbelly was the infamous Count of Sunset, who was a figure during this era known for donning a cape and top hat. The Sunset Strip was his playground, and he was definitely a hunter who hunted his victims on the strip. One of those victims being 18-year-old Lisa Ann Mathers. As we explore the Sunset Strip's past, we'll uncover tales of excess, scandal, and tragedy that played out against the backdrop of neon lights and pulsating music. The Paranormal Association, we do know a few bars in and around the Strip that definitely have their own ghost stories, the Comedy Store and the Viper Room, but did you know that the Rainbow Bar and Grill and Whiskey A Go-Go also have quite a bit of stories to tell? Who or what lingers in and around the Vampire Lair in the Rainbow Bar and Grill, and what is the Charles Manson connection within the Whiskey A Go-Go? So you already know the drill. You want to grab your salt shaker or that salt lamp because you're going to sprinkle that circle of salt around you. But you also want to grab that leather jacket and teased hairdo as we transport ourselves back to a time when anything was possible on the Sunset Strip. Let's see what secrets we can uncover from this electrifying chapter in LA's history. Let's get Holly Weird on the Sunset Strip. Hey, Holly Weirdos. This episode contains content that may be alarming to some listeners. Please note that this podcast episode features themes of violence, descriptions of sexual assault desires, and themes which may be quite triggering. So listener discretion is advised. Now, let's get Holly Weird.
Hi, you've reached Tell Me a Ghost Story.
I see a face in the window.
It started bolting up the stairs.
A podcast featuring true ghost stories from callers just like you.
I remember hearing a woman weeping.
The lights were on the whole night. I didn't go to sleep at all.
I'm your host, Michelle Newman. Follow and tune in every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts and tell me a ghost story.
Hey guys, we're back for another delicious episode of Holly Weird Paranormal Podcast.
So delicious.
It's so nice and so fresh. That's just right. Came hype and hop out of the Sunset Strip because this is where we lay our scenes tonight, weirdos.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Bryce, what was your first experience on the Sunset Strip when you first set but your pretty little precious Midwest feet onto the gravel of LA?
I do have kind of a good one, actually. Yeah.
I can't wait. We can't wait to hear it. What is it?
Pretty typical, I think. For anyone who isn't super familiar with the Sunset Strip, it is it's not that far off from how it's portrayed in Pretty Woman all the time. So what you're seeing, obviously Hollywood Boulevard is a bit north of that. So what you're seeing during the Oscars, that is not real. That is a facelift of all facelifts, and it takes weeks of the city of Los Angeles removing unhoused people and putting up all of the lights and everything. So what you see on television of Hollywood, watch Pretty Woman, because that's a lot closer. But you don't know that when you're 22 moving to Los Angeles from Indiana. And so I was driving, I had driven across the country with my friend Leanne. Hey girl. And we had stayed at 29 Palms, and then I drove the rest of the way in, orientation at the school. Yeah. And then, you know, so I'm like exhausted, drove from the school a couple blocks. My old apartment was right off of Sunset. And so I like am driving and I couldn't even turn off of Sunset onto my road, onto the Wilcox, because the entire Wilcox and Sunset intersection was shut down and there was like helicopters like circling the
Oh
area
no.
and they were like doing a massive sting arrest. It was like the whole block. And I'm just like, I just want to unpack my knife set. Like, it was so chaotic. I just had a car full of shit in Hollywood. Like, I
Yeah.
just want to go to bed. Like,
You guys need
no,
a
you have
shower?
to watch this person get arrested. Like, chaos.
See, you got the full effect. You got the theatrics, you got the
Oh,
helicopters. They were ready for you.
they
They knew
said,
you were coming. Yeah.
welcome to Hollywood. What's your dream? They
I
really went there. Yeah.
know. Oh my God. My first experience with the Sunset Strip. I lived two blocks away when I first moved here in 2009. I lived off of Phyllis between Hammond and Doheny, and I was a block away from the Roxy. So I was in walking distance to the Whiskey,
All of
Roxy,
those,
Rainbow,
yeah.
Viper, and it was such a dream. It was like the best 2.5 years. Like I was able to walk everywhere and anywhere in Boys Town.
Yes.
And I just remembered my first experience was having to leave my apartment because a block away was a set of
Oh, no.
condos that were being seized by LAPD SWAT
Of
because a man had
course.
locked himself in the garage after offing his wife and
Oh,
turning the gun
no.
onto himself. So that was my first week
No.
moving, and I just remembered not even bothering to get in my car because like the whole suite was like street was blocked off. So
100%, yeah.
me and my neighbors ended up going up the street to Rainbow and having a few drinks until
Yeah, you
everything
gotta.
like was done and said. And
Boo, familiar side. No.
yeah, it was really odd. It was a wonderful week because it was exciting. I was moving, but it was a weird week because that's
Yeah.
when Michael Jackson passed away.
Oh my God, right.
This whole crime down the street at this condo with this man and his wife was happening. And then 2 days before I
God.
moved, this house in the corner of our street caught fire. It was a hoarder house. It was the weirdest thing. It was the weird chaos. And then we were
Yeah.
about to enter this whole ordeal with the fires. And
Yes.
yeah, a precursor to my life and career.
Sunset. Yeah. I mean,
Like,
that's the thing. You could have told me anything and I'd be like, yeah, well, that's like, it's sunset.
yeah, but that's the
Like
thing
anything can happen there.
about the Sunset Strip and about these places is that they're, kind of like a refuge to a lot of people, especially Angelenos, transplants around here. And so it was like a refuge for me and my neighbors were like, all this chaos is going. Let's go have a drink
Yes.
at the Rainbow.
Yes.
So guys, today we're going to be talking about a character that actually terrorized the Sunset Strip, and that is a man that went by the name or the nickname of the Count. He was known
Oh.
as the Count of Sunset, and his name was Edmund Arne Matthews, who was a, and this is a trigger warning, he was a serial rapist and also a murderer. He was responsible for a slew of rapes that happened in and around the area during the early 80s, and he was also responsible for the death of an 18-year-old Angeleno who went by the name Lisa Ann Mathers. But the one thing about the Sunset Strip, it has a lot of history, but it has a lot of dark history. So we not a lot of people know about the Count of Sunset and how he terrorized the strip during the 80s, but there was
Did he give
also,
himself that nickname or did the police give that to him?
I
Like, who
think
gave
he
him
gave
this
himself
name?
that nickname
Oh,
after
that's
he
so
bought the
embarrassing.
ape, because the thing is, the reason why he was called the Count of Sunset was because he would walk around Sunset in a cape and hat. And he would.
So, look, obviously, I'm not trying to downplay the atrocious murders and like crimes and assaults that he committed. I would never try and downplay that. But men are so embarrassing. We are the most embarrassing creatures on this fucking planet. Nickname yourself.
The
You're
count.
wearing a little cape. Look, and
Yes.
here's the thing. If he wasn't a murderer, if he was just like into magic, go off. I want everyone to
Right.
love what they love. But you're embarrassing, and I'm embarrassed for you. I hope your ghost is embarrassed.
But this is the problem with LA. It's a Neverland for people that just don't want to grow up. And it's a place where people can really reinvent themselves for the best or for the worst. And in his case, it was for the worst.
Oh, no.
But it wasn't just him that was wreaking havoc on the Sunset Strip. At this time, we had Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker.
Yes.
And we are just coming out from the Sunset Strip Slayers or the Sunset Strip Killers. So back in 1980, we had a couple who were responsible for the deaths of many young women. Douglas Carlark and Carol Bundy once terrorized the streets of Los Angeles, specifically the Sunset Strip. They would pick up predominantly young sex workers. They would do horrific things to them. They would kill them by shooting them in the back of the head and dumping their remains off of a freeway. I think it was the 101 or the 405.
Sure.
So it was like,
geographically, for anyone that doesn't know, that is like, those are the two that are right there. So of course.
Exactly. And they were eventually captured and tried, and they were, they're serving life in prison. I think one of them passed away. But the Sunset Strip is definitely filled with tons of history, tons of historical landmarks. You have the Sunset Tower. You have the Chateau Marmont.
Oh, yeah.
You have the Comedy Store. You have Rainbow, the Roxy, and the Whiskey. And right across the street, you have the Viper Room. It's like an old actress. It's been around, and she's always constantly working. She's been in many reality shows like Selling Sunset. Have you seen
it? Oh, have I seen it? How dare you? Of course I have.
Of course you have. And she's been a part of many films and shows that have been shot there, of course. But it has been famous for its one particular block between La Barre and Hammond. And that block consists of the Whiskey, Rainbow, and of course, the Roxy.
Yeah.
And we're going to touch on a couple of these places. So first and foremost, the Sunset Strip has been there since the 1920s. And what's really interesting is that gambling was illegal in Los Angeles, the city, but it was legal. Gambling was actually legal in unincorporated LA County. So that fostered the development of the nightlife in West Hollywood, specifically the Strip. So you had a lot of casinos moving in, a lot of attractive people going to these casinos and drinking, during Prohibition. Then you have the gangsters coming in. So in the 30s and 40s, you had places like Sherry's, Ciro's, Macombo, the Trocadero, and of course the Via Roma, which is now the Rainbow Bar and Grill. And they were all ran by gangsters such as Mickey Cohen and, of course, Bugsy Siegel. So actually, the Sunset Strip was a playing ground for a lot of gangsters. There's this picture through the West Hollywood Historical Preservation Society where there's this car parked in front of, I think it's Trocadero's, and it has bullet holes in the back of the car. That actually occurred the night before on the Strip. There was a fight and a battle that went on between these two gangs. This is what happened. Then we go into the 60s and we are introduced to some pretty interesting clubs like the Roxy, Pandora's Box, London Fog. Yes. And you guessed it, of course, the Whiskey A Go-Go, which is a huge, huge staple there. The Whiskey A Go-Go originated in Chicago in 1958, but it opens its doors as a franchise in 1966 on the Sunset Strip. Originally, what sat there was a bank in the 20s and 30s that closed. Then it was turned to the party. That didn't do well. But it took one person, Elmer Valentine, a retired police officer, and a couple of his friends that decided, hey, let's open a franchise, Whiskey A Go-Go. Let's hire some dancers, put them in cages, have a dance floor, hire one kick-ass DJ, and here we go. And it opened and it blew up. So you had a lot of amazing bands come in and out, people who got their starts from Whiskey A Go-Go. You had the Monkees, the Beatles hanging out there. And then we hit into the 80s. And this is where it gets really interesting because in the 80s, we have this massive explosion of metal. So metal.
Yes.
Who's your favorite metal band, Bryce?
Oh, please. This little Manila envelope. I couldn't even tell you a single metal band.
Well, West Coast.
I will say, when I used to work at the gym, one of the trainers, I think he would play a lot of metal, and working out to that really That really works for me.
It
So,
really does help.
yeah, there are some, but no. Could you imagine me at a metal show? They would laugh me right. Although, actually, most people who like metal are like the nicest, chillest, coolest people you've ever met. So, I'm
But you
sure.
would love the hair, the eyeliner, especially
Yeah.
glam rock
Yes,
metal,
glam
right?
rock.
Yes. So, here during the 80s, we had this massive explosion, specifically in the West Coast, of metal. So you had clubs on the Sunset Strip, like the Whiskey A Go Go and the Roxy. It became a LA-based heavy metal band's haven that catered to bands such as Van Halen, Quiet Riot, and a very young, very fresh new group called Motley Crue. And of
Those old
course,
songs, those.
all those old so-and-sos and Guns N' Roses. And Motley Crue ran all over LA. They treated the city at that time like it was their playground.
I
They would
love
play a
that.
show at the Whiskey. They would go down the street to the Seventh Veil and catch a strip show.
The Seventh
Have you
Veil.
ever been? I've been there once.
Yeah.
Can't remember. I just remember that a lot of the strippers were really nice. They were really
That is actually one of the only strip clubs that I have been to, and no, I did not have a great experience there. I got yelled at.
I had a very interesting experience because it started at Cherry Pop, and then we ended up, it was me and my girlfriend. We ended up meeting these guys. They ended up like taking us for a ride. We went to Whiskey, and then we went to Seventh Veil. And we were like, okay, we're tired. We're gonna go home. We made really good friends with one of the strippers there who gave us a really good tip on wearing lotion and then applying your perfume or a bath and body spray that smelled like roasted coconut. She smelled good. And we're like, what is the trick? And she's
I
like,
love that.
lotion, then fragrance. It'll last longer. I was like, okay. That is all I could remember.
Yeah, no, I got yelled at by one of the workers there.
What?
She was having an, you could tell that she was either at the end of
Having a
her
moment.
shift or it had been a bad night for her.
Oh
So I do not
no.
blame her, like working class solidarity. I was very overwhelmed in general. I went with a friend and I did not really want to be there, but I was there. So like they're there to make money and I'm not really participating in that. And so she was like just upset that I like basically was just sitting there watching. I did tip them to be clear, but I didn't like get a lap dance. I wasn't like into it, obviously. She was like not feeling my vibe. Totally understood. It's not, it was on me. It was not for me. And then yeah, she was just like, I hate like working here. Like no one wants to tip. I'm like, I'm really sorry. Like here's more money, but like don't touch me. So yeah, that was my experience at the Seventh Veil. Good times, good times.
Yeah.
Shocking everyone. Watching women strip is really not for me, apparently.
No. You don't
Surprise.
say.
Like I appreciate it, the artistry and the athleticism that is required,
Yes,
but it's
it
just
takes a
not
lot
for
of
me.
muscle. It really does. It takes a
Yeah.
lot of muscle and talent to do that. I
Oh my
wouldn't.
God, yeah. But
Yes,
just
like to
it's not
the
really.
coordination. Yes. What is taken off first would go on in my head. Is it bottoms first or top, then bottom? I don't know. Okay, here
Yeah,
we go. We're
I
just
think,
dancing.
yeah.
It is heard. The only trick it is to twerk is in the ankles. That's all I remember. And so
Good to know.
there
Look at
you
us learning.
go. So Motley Crue would travel to Seventh Veil, and then of
Sure,
course they
sure.
would go and like pretty much party the rest of the night at a Cantor's, and they would be there to the wee hours of the morning. Of
Hilarious.
course, Cantor's at Old So and So that we spoke about last
Yes, a
episode, of
great place to end
course.
the night, though. I'm not gonna lie.
Exactly. Oh yes, just grab a coffee, a pastry, you'd be fine,
Ooh,
of
yes.
course. So, where our story leads to is the Sunset Strip, and during the 80s, this was a huge place to go. So, if you were a young Angelino growing up in the valley, you would get ready with your friends, climb over the hill, and head to the strip because Coldwater Canyon was that big hill you just had to climb from the valley, put you straight. It literally spits you out on the strip,
Truly, yeah.
and you just drive a couple minutes down, and you're already there at the club. So a lot of the kids used to do that. They would jump over the hill, go catch a show, and just have a really good time. And back then, that was the place to see and be seen, especially if you wanted to catch a show by Motley Crue, Van Halen, and of course, Guns N' Roses. So we follow this young girl by the name of Lisa Ann Mathers. And a shout out to one of our listeners, Carla. She sent me this case a few years back, and it's been sitting in our episodes to do files, and
I
we're
love that.
finally getting around to it. So, Carla, this is for you. Carla actually went to school with Lisa and told me about this case and pretty
Oh,
much experienced everything that the family experienced too, because she had this connection to her and she really wanted her story to be told. So Lisa Ann Mathers is 18 years old. She just graduated from Van Nuys High School. She's now entering her beauty school phase. So she wants to be a cosmetologist. She wants to, you know, do hair, do makeup. And that was her goal. Her and her sister, Roslyn, love going to the strip. They love getting dressed up. They love catching the shows. And on one particular night, they actually, let's say that this night is the precursor to what is to follow for Lisa Ann Mathers. But according to Oxygen True Crime, because they actually covered this case in 2022, Roslyn actually depicts a time, a really scary moment that was echoing to a lot of stories of young women that would travel by themselves to the strip. They would travel to the strip to go catch a show at the Whiskey A Go Go. They meet up with this man who looked like a rock star. And he was like, hey, to Lisa, her sister Roslyn, and a friend named Amy, let's go have fun. Let's go catch a party. Roslyn was trying to find her purse. Her purse ends up going missing. She loses her keys that were in the purse. So they catch a ride with this dude. And the guy is driving recklessly through the canyon to go to this party. And Roslyn tells the guy, hey, you need to slow down and calm down. To which he replies something along the line of, you're going to shut your mouth because I'll, you know, if I have to take you back to the strip to walk down the strip like the whore that you are, then I will. It was like night and day. This guy is scaring the crap out of him. So he takes him to this house party. They get out of the car. He's like, I need to work. And they go into the house with him and they immediately leave the house because they are noticing there's a lot of naked people in this house. They're on the floor, they're doing drugs and they're passed out.
Sure.
So they're freaking out. The man comes out and they're telling him, you need to take us back. He only agrees to take Roslyn back to the strip, leaving Lisa and her friend Amy at the house. Yeah. So Roslyn gets dumped in some random corner of the strip. She ends up calling the cops. The cops immediately go to the house where she immediately sends them the directions. She's like, I remember exactly where this house was because I wanted my sister back. I wanted my friend back. So they were able to retrieve both of them. But it's a precursor to what will happen, unfortunately, to Lisa. Yeah, it was really scary. And unfortunately, on January 11th/12th of 1985, Lisa, Amy, and her friend Anthony O'Farrell all meet up at the strip. Lisa and her friend leave a note at her parents' house saying, hey, you know, we're going to be out. Don't wait up, like she always does. So they go into, or they attempt to go into a lot of these clubs because back then you had to be 21 and up. And they didn't have the proper identification. So they resorted to the sidewalk like many people do. So they could still hear the live music coming out of the Whiskey A Go Go. And they, you know, end up meeting a bunch of people who are actually having a tailgate out of their truck. Lisa somehow goes missing. She separates from her friends, but she is seen talking to this tall, skinny guy with long, stringy brown hair, kind of looks like a rocker. And that is the last time she is seen that night. And her friends are separated from her from the rest of the night. They don't know what happened to her. They think, oh, she probably got a cab and went back home. But the next morning, the parents wake up, Lisa's parents, and they notice that she hasn't come home.
Which, like, right. It sounds like when you're saying, you're like, that's crazy. But there's no Uber, there's no Lyft, there's no cell phones, there's nothing. Raw dogging it. So it's like, yeah, why would they not assume that?
Exactly. And it's not like, you know, she has like an Apple Watch or an Apple phone to figure out where she is. So they're frantically calling friends. They don't know where she is. They said the last time they saw her was at the Whiskey. And soon the day turns into night and Lisa is still nowhere to be found. A missing persons report is finally filed with the LAPD. And ever since then, Lisa's mother is frantically looking for her and had made it her full-time job to pass out missing people's flyers with Lisa's picture, name, and phone number and description. And she will tend to do this for another year. So it is put on the table at one point with LAPD. Could this have been the doing of the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez? Because at this time he was wreaking havoc in LA. He had just murdered 13 people and it was on the table. but he will be caught in 1986. However, the patterns and everything that were pointing towards him were still not making sense, but it was kind of like in the back burner. Could he possibly had done something to Lisa? Wow. So the parents are going through all sorts of directions of where she is, and then they finally resort to getting a psychic. So here's where the supernatural element comes in. So the mother is so desperate, she hires a psychic.
God, that's so heartbreaking.
She hires the psychic. They have a seance. The psychic requests the mother to bring items that belong to Lisa. She touches the items one by one. She tells the family, I see her. I see her spirit. She is no longer living. She is of the spiritual realm because she is dead. And they're like, please tell us more. Like, what do you mean she's dead? She's telling me she's under debris. She's under dirt. She's under twigs. Mm. She is passed on. And that was it. And a few months later, a few months more go by. And in 1986, a Canadian camper who is touring LA is touring Coldwater Canyon. He starts to pitch a tent. As he's putting the tent spike into the ground, he hits something he thinks is a stone. He reaches down and he grabs a human skull.
No.
Yeah, it is pretty bad. It's obviously he's freaked out. He immediately heads down the hill. He finds a public place where he can find a phone, immediately calls LAPD. They come in. They treat it now like a crime scene, obviously, because what they end up finding is not just skeletal remains, but they end up finding handcuffs and rope. So they know that there's foul play there. So it turns out through the coroner's report that those remains are of Lisa Ann Mathers, who disappeared almost a year before. It turned out that she had suffocated. She was strangled. She was tied around the neck to something, possibly a tree, and was strangled to death. And there was some sort of a puncture wound in the back of her neck. So they know that this is something treated as a, you know, cold case, obviously. Now the Richard Ramirez connection, they go back to Richard Ramirez, still doesn't fit the pattern. So now that's fully off of the table. Because of her, the body's condition just didn't fit with his MO. But they kind of hit a wall because they're just going based off of the description of the last person Lisa was last seen talking to was this tall, skinny man, looked like a rocker, had rocker hair. That's pretty much the description of all these young men on the strip. So it's pretty vague. You know, they look like a washed out Machine Gun Kelly, in other words. So yeah, fair. But they do get a bit of a tip. So it turns out that they're led to the direction of a man by the name of Edmund Arnie Matthews, who is somewhat of a fixture of Sunset Strip. And of course, he's known as the Count for wearing a tall hat and cape.
Oh boy.
I know. He would dress in character and claim to be part of the rock and roll scene. He rubbed elbows with Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, all these famous musicians. He also claimed to be the drummer of Ted Nugent and the roommate of Nancy Sinatra. He would often be seen talking to a lot of young women, and he would often be seen trying to lure these women away from these clubs. Yeah, so he was a very interesting character. According to acquaintances that knew him, they didn't feel comfortable with him because he had a Dr. Jekyll and Hyde complex. So according to those who did talk to him and know him on a different level, they said that he was always talking about this dark fantasy of tying young women up, having his way with them, and then killing them. And then he would talk about devil worshiping, archangels, and other dark things that made these individuals pretty uncomfortable. But it turned out that Edmund was actually in jail at the time. He was just thrown into jail and was convicted for two rapes that occurred in Coldwater Canyon years before. And their description of Edmund fit the description of the Count. So he was booked and tried and thrown into jail for 10 to 12 years. But the thing that was so interesting was before his arrest, Lise actually got a tip that Edmund was in Coldwater Canyon. And when they catch him, to arrest him, he is seen walking down a hill with a lantern and a shovel.
Jesus. Now,
at this time, they didn't put the Lisa Ann Mathers case together with him. They were more focused on arresting him. They didn't put two and two together. And sure. It turned out that he was coming down the hill after hiding her body.
Oh.
Yes. And months later, her body also, would be like, discovered.
Not to just like ACAB my way through this, but here we are. If you see someone coming down the hill with a shovel and a lantern,
mm-hmm.
why are you not asking follow-up
exactly.
questions?
Exactly. Like, thank you.
That is not a normal occurrence.
Yeah.
Whether they're wearing a cape or not. Like, what are you doing? First question, why are you coming down? What is the shovel for?
Yes. Like, think about it.
I just don't. That always
you're not
looks.
Putting out fire,
obviously,
sir. You're not
hindsight and all of those things make
looks
it very
kind
easy.
Of sus. You know,
but it's quarter. Like I get it. It is like armchair quarterbacking, but like the follow up. Please ask the questions. Please follow up.
Ugh. I know you're not hunting for coal or gold in the canyon.
There's really no reason.
Obviously, you're doing something.
There's no good reason that you would have a shovel. I'm sorry. There just
but then
isn't.
Again, you know. Edmund was very charismatic. He had his way of really schmoozing up and down the scene. He had his way of getting into clubs and actually talking to these musicians. So you could imagine how he could sweet talk the cops like, oh, you know, you look sus, but yeah, you're really nice. He's a really nice guy. And he has some really awesome hair if you think about it. But
don't even get me started. That's going to start a rant that will never end.
So he has this conviction of these two rape charges, right? And he fits the description of what Amy and Anthony, who actually were the ones that last saw Lisa talking to Edmund. So they're like, oh no, that was the guy that we last saw her with.
Wow.
So the detectives end up paying Matthews a visit in prison. And during this interview and questioning, Matthews confesses to picking up Lisa on the Sunset Strip and claimed that Lisa willingly left with him. Matthews told detectives he and Lisa had consensual sex in a pool of a nearby school before he took her up to Coldwater Canyon. And he claimed, this is what he claims, so bear with me with a grain of salt.
Oh,
he claimed Lisa allowed Matthews to tie her. Oh, yeah, to tie her to a tree to continue their sexual encounter before she lost her balance and slipped, becoming entangled with the rope, which resulted in the strangulation death. And Matthews admitted to drinking too much and alleged he could not free Lisa from the ropes, that her death was the result of a horrifying and freak accident. Which, yes, go right ahead.
Look, nobody loves consent more than me, frankly, but even if you're drinking, it's not like she broke her neck, right? Like that would be the injury that you would associate with like a slip and a fall and you like snapped your neck.
Mm-hmm.
You don't strangle immediately. It takes some time and pressure and continual repeated like, sir, please be serious. You cape wearing boob.
I know. Well, the detectives were very, very much smarter than that. They could see right through him. Sure. I mean, the fact that you left her up in the hill, then went back and with a lantern and shovel to hide her body. I mean, come on. And the police didn't really believe Lisa voluntarily went up the hill with Matthews, nor did they think she became entangled in the ropes. And they were like, nope, this really doesn't play out as an accident. You knew what you were doing considering your past in this area with these two other women. And they believed that Lisa gave a really good fight, that she fought, and she fought to the death.
That's so sad.
And you know, it was bound to happen that he was going to be caught again and be tried. So he was. So in 1991, he is put in front of a court and the jury found him guilty for first degree murder of Lisa Ann Mathers.
Wow.
And according to her sister, Rosalind, on the Oxygen True Crime, he took away a beautiful girl who could have had anything and everything in life She was very bright, and now she's gone.
That's so sad.
And he is still serving life without the possibility of parole in California yeah. State Prison to this day.
Good rot.
I know. He is rotting in prison, and Lisa is now survived by her sister, Rosalind. I know as of right now, her parents have passed away, but now her mother is finally at peace knowing that this man was, you know, definitely convicted and tried for the murder of her daughter. Yeah. And she's a beautiful girl, And it just sucks that her life was taken away by this man. And this is one of many stories that come out of the Strip.
Yeah.
I mean, the Strip had a lot of beautiful history, really interesting and crazy history, but there's a lot of, there's a sticky dark side to it.
Yeah. I mean, as with so many parts of LA, there's like the heights and the triumph of the human spirit in entertainment and the whole industry that's here. There are such beautiful things that come out of that, but there truly always is such a dark underbelly.
It really is. And specifically in the 80s, there was an uptick, big uptick in roofies. So like looking at other cases too, specifically in the Strip, a lot of women were being roofied.
Yeah.
Going to these bars. You know, they were being taken advantage of. And I mean, this was, you know, one of the many cases where, I mean, this took a really bad turn. But this was one of the worst cases to come out of the Strip, of course, alongside the Sunset Strip Slayers. But we head into now the paranormal association with the Strip.
Yes.
We all know about the ghost stories of the Comedy Store. Yes, that, you know, this Strip was ran by gangsters. And a lot of that energy is definitely submerged within the walls, the floors, and basements.
Wow, yeah.
If you hear the stories, which we'll cover soon, of the Comedy Store, many comedians have had experiences, especially workers have had experience with the Comedy Store and its ghosts. People have claimed to see the apparition of a very tall man in a fedora and period suit, looking like he was from the 30s in the basement.
Oh, you had me with tall man. You lost me with fedora. What a roller coaster.
I mean, just as long as he didn't have a cape and a top hat, we'll be fine, right?
Fedora's pretty up there for me. I'm really not a fedora girl. I know.
Man with a fedora on a dating site is a big red flag as it is. So there you go. If they're a ghost with fedora, sorry.
Well, ghost, maybe I get it, but for me,
in life, you never pursue a man with a fedora. In death, you don't.
I don't think I could. I mean, I guess it depends on how tall, but
imagine trying to use a Ouija board there, like. F-E-D-O-R. Is that what you're wearing? Excuse me. No, we're going to close the circle immediately. Why? He's wearing a fucking fedora, Nancy. We're closing the circle.
Sorry to anyone wearing a fedora. It's just a no for
no,
me.
I mean, we wanted to communicate a ghost, but a ghost with a freaking fedora.
So sorry.
Goodbye. Light a candle.
There's so much hate mail for this.
I know. They're like, I'm listening to your podcast while wearing a fedora.
Correct. Welcome to Fedora Weird Paranormal.
Yes. The Viper Room is another place where people have claimed to feel that same energy too, especially the energy of a young River Phoenix who passed away in front of the doors of the Viper Room due to an overdose. You've probably seen those episodes of Ghost Adventures of like the many unexplainable occurrences that happened there. And a lot of it is connected to the gangs that ran the Strip. And then we go to the Whiskey A Go-Go, and they have a slew of ghost stories. So back in 2022, I traveled to the Whiskey with our friend Ansley and, of course, our other friend, Zachariah the Witch. And we were given the opportunity to sit down with the staff and hear their ghost stories. So there's a lot of hauntings that have occurred in the Whiskey and the Rainbow Bar and Grill, too. Because the Rainbow Bar and Grill used to be the Via Nova. And before that, it was a place where gangsters used to do their doings, of course. There's a lot of hot spots in the Rainbow Bar and Grill, which we had the opportunity to visit a couple of weeks ago. They're very awesome. The people that are running the Rainbow also work at the Whiskey, and they're amazing. That. And they're so open about their experiences at both locations.
Wow.
So the Rainbow has a lot of the original walls and decor of the Via Nova. You can sit in the booth where Marilyn Monroe and Joe DiMaggio had their first date. And you best believe Marilyn almost stood up Joe DiMaggio. She took 3 hours. She was 3 hours late for their date.
3 hours?
Yes.
Look, she's obviously like the most beautiful woman in the world. I don't think I would wait 3 hours.
Yeah,
for someone. That's crazy.
It is, but he was willing to. I mean, it's Marilyn. You could wait a day and a half for her, and I mean, come on, it was Marilyn Monroe.
Like, would I wait 3 hours for Dev Patel? Yes, I would.
Henry like, if we're being Cavill. Honest,
oh Henry God, Henry Cavill, like in 40 a years. Swimsuit.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but like
a thousand more.
Yeah, truly, I know. But man, 3 hours. That.
Yeah, she was passionably late, and he was a little pissed. But I mean, it's Marilyn Grand Dame Monroe, of course.
Sure, yeah, tea.
You can actually sit in the booth, order a pizza, and relive that moment, of course. But the owner Michael, whose father owned this place back when it was the Via Nova, knows that place inside and out.
Wow.
He showed us the Vampire's Lair. So there's a place, if you go on the second level, called the Vampire's Lair. And that's where I saw something I couldn't explain. I saw an image in my head, and I get these images sometimes.
Yeah.
I walked into this dark room, which was called the Vampire Lair. And it was a place where a lot of big musicians, Alice Cooper, members of the Beatles used to hang out. It was like for exclusive members, right?
Love that.
But the feeling I got there was someone sitting next to me and I could see it. And I felt like it's a man in a suit and he has a jacket over his shoulders and his legs were crossed and he was just watching me. And I was like, yeah, there's a man in here with me. And I really feel like I'm not alone. And one of the workers was like, yeah, you feel that presence. You see him. I'm like, loud and clear. Like he's not scaring me, but he's observing me and I'm walking out right now. It was very, very clear that there was a presence there. You definitely felt it. And they take us to this janitorial closet. And Michael, the owner, points to the ceiling. You see that? He removes this panel of the ceiling. There's a secret room. There's a secret room where gangsters used to go up and have their meetings. There was a table and chair there. And I was willing to climb up to go in there and do some sort of a session. But he was like, there's other places in this restaurant that were secret passageways where they could go and spy on other people. He was showing me these things and it was insane. Like he showed me the original entrance of what it was when it was an Italian restaurant. But many people have claimed that it is haunted. The Rainbow Bar and Grill definitely has a presence. People have claimed to feel something in one of the restrooms. People have also claimed that they've seen a man in the Vampire's Lair. And people don't like to close after hours by themselves, let alone open the place by themselves. One waitress who has been working there for a very long time, we interviewed her and she's like, yeah, like I felt like someone touched I think it was along the lines that she was touched. Mm-mm. She was closing. She was by herself. She felt like she wasn't alone and something touched her, like grabbed her shoulder or grabbed her hair.
No.
She turns around and there's no one there, but she kept on seeing some movement in the corner of her eye.
No.
Now, do they feel like their lives are in danger? Do they feel scared, like in fear? No, they just know that whatever's there is letting them know that it's there. And of course, Lemmy, the famous rock star Lemmy, who was a frequent regular there. He was a regular and he definitely was a staple of the Rainbow. There's a statue dedicated to Lemmy. People leave offerings like money and cigarettes. And also, I think his ashes are going to be interned there because he loved the Rainbow so much.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy. But if you watch Spooky Foodies YouTube with our friend Zachariah the Witch, they put a video up. If you go to her YouTube, we'll post it on our story too. Yes. You could watch their investigation and the stories and the things that they come up with are insane. Now we head next door, a doorway, because next door is the Roxy. And then you go to the Whiskey, which is on that corner of La Barre. And the stories there are really interesting. Mm. So the common occurrence that happens there is people in the kitchen of the Whiskey A Go Go have seen an apparition of a man in a white shirt.
Wow.
It's repetitive. It's always at night. And he's always walking past the doorway between the bar and the kitchen. workers such as bussers, cooks, waitresses have seen the same apparition. And I'm like, I notice in my notes, it's the same time of night. He's doing the same thing. This is residual. This is a recording because he's not interacting. He's just doing work. So there's also a rumor that when it was a bank, there was a suicide and unaliving of the bank owner in an office. And that has been debunked. There was no murder or death on the property. So that has been off the table. But the manager that used to work there and have her office on the first level would claim that things would move in her office. Doors would slam open and shut by themselves.
Damn.
You go into the second level into the green rooms, and there's one particular green room where we'll post this video on our Patreon of me and Ansley conducting an Estes session with her boy, Nate. And a lot of the things that come out of there are very interesting, but we did a session with Ansley on the stage. So while I was taken on the stage by one of the managers, she tells me of a story of feeling the heaviest of energies here. There's even an urban legend, and actually a story that is shared with the workers about what Motley Crue saw on stage. To this day, they will never, ever explain what they saw one night while they were performing a show. So according to the band, they were doing a show. They see something in the audience that they can't explain. It scares them to death to the point where they had to close the show early. And to this day, they don't talk about it.
Wow.
Could it be drugs? Could it have been alcohol? Who knows?
Look, but it's yeah, that's them. Always a possibility for sure.
Yeah, it scared them. And she said that the stage is a pretty active area. And Ansley and I conducted a session with her dead bell. And I'll post this on our Patreon as well. But the questions that we were asking, it turned out that whatever was there, one of the entities or energies was there, was Scarlett Maglieri. So Scarlett Maglieri was the wife to Mario Maglieri. The Maglieris were the owners of the Whiskey and Rainbow as well. And they passed away years ago, and Scarlett came through. We think it's Scarlett because when we asked if this was Scarlett, the bell was very responsive. We asked Scarlett during the session if she likes how things are being ran. It was a ding for yes. Yes, I like how everything's being ran. I'm still here. I'm still watching over things. You have a good group of women who are in managerial positions that are working and running and calling the shots there too. It's a really good group of people working there, but a lot of them are like these women that are like, they love the place. They're running it. They're making Scarlett very proud. Her energy is felt. And she definitely, what we believe, she came through during the session.
That's crazy.
Now there's a Charles Manson connection to the Whiskey A Go-Go that you can find the story on their website. But according to the managers, this was in the early 60s. Mario Maglieri is there closing shop with the rest of his workers. He sees a young man who is a little bit irate. He tells him, hey, you got to go. We're closing. And this man refuses to leave. He ends up going to the stairs, sits down on the staircase and tells Mario, I'm not leaving. I'm God. I'm not going anywhere. I'm a musician, but I am God. You're going to get the F out of here. This is my joint. You got to leave. And he gets people to kick Charles Manson out. So that man was Charles Manson, who felt like he was going to get his bearings and his start at the Whiskey. But Mario said that something about this man really rubbed him the wrong way. Wow. He was always a supporter of musicians. He always took care of his musicians. He was Italian, man. He took care of you. If you were coming into his bar, if you're coming in and you're a musician, you're starving. He was going to give you a plate of food, give you a place to kind of hang out and treat you like you're a guest at his house. But for this man, Charles Manson, he was not going to have it with him. He was like, I wanted him out.
Wow.
So that is the connection of Charlie Manson with the Whiskey A Go-Go.
That's crazy.
Bryce and I will definitely do an interview at the Rainbow. Yes, they invited us to come and interview them. And they are definitely going to give us a tour. It's a beautiful place. You feel the love from the workers. You really do feel the love and passion. But before we bring this to an end, I'm going to play this little interview. This is a ghost
Yes.
story from one of the gentlemen that I think it's he was a bouncer or a bartender,
Okay.
but the first visit when I was there with Ansley and Zachariah, he had this very interesting ghost story of what he saw by the stage.
Okay.
What a surprise of the Whiskey a Go Go. So I'm going to play it real quick.
How long have you?
And what has been your experience here? What has been the one that has like
As far as
really like as far as you've been working here, like what has really like catapulted you to believe like there's something here? Like
I mean, I'm still somewhat skeptical about all those things, but I was telling you, I was here for like maybe 6 or 8 months, and I saw like it looked like floating water above the stage while a band was playing, and there were like maybe like 40 people on the dance floor. Then all of a sudden, it like swooped down, and it like a lady reacted to it in the crowd, but nobody else seemed to
Wow.
like notice it or anything.
But her.
And I went up to her and said, "Hey, did somebody just throw water on you?" And she said, "No, it passed right through me."
Oh, no.
So there is that.
Who was playing?
I don't remember. There's some, I mean, I see 8 bands a day here.
That's
That's a
true.
lot.
Yeah.
I'm
Which
not
is
gonna
so
remember a
cool.
band.
Unless it was a good band.
First 6 months, yeah. It wasn't it didn't happen during Kiss. It didn't
No.
happen during Def Leppard, I'll tell you that. It happened one of those other times.
Okay. Should we say bye to
Yeah.
whatever's
Yeah, I
here?
think we could go.
Thank you for creeping around.
I know.
Thanks for teasing us.
It's like watching us, but I
Yeah.
have a feeling like someone fell down the stairs.
Today's my last day, so.
So that is the story of the bartender, and that
Oh.
was his biggest experience at the Whiskey a Go Go. Now, he really isn't a believer of ghosts. He really isn't too much of a spiritual person. He really didn't go through any sort of weird initiation until now, because that is the thing I notice with a lot of the interviews with these workers of the whiskey. They kind of go through this unexplainable initiation, kind of like the same initiation of the silent movie theater. Like when we spoke about those workers, it's the same for the people at the whiskey. They're either going to be touched, they're going to see something, or they're going to experience something after working several months at the
Wow.
Whiskey a Go Go. So our conclusion after our second time investigating was that we don't know what is truly haunting the whiskey. We
Yeah.
believe it's some sort of energy. It's definitely something from a different time. It could definitely Scarlet checking in on things,
Yeah.
but
The
it's a
water
combination.
manifestation is so
Yeah,
weird, though.
it's very unique and very
Yeah.
interesting. And for him and this woman to have a shared experience is even more amazing.
Crazy.
Yeah, because he was like, I thought I was really on something. Did somebody
But,
spike my
like,
coke, you know?
can you tell me how? Oh my God, I would be furious if I thought that someone was dumping water on me.
I know.
Just wow. No,
And of
absolutely not.
course,
I
it's
would be
near
livid.
the biggest hot spot, which was the
Right.
stage, you know, where Motley Crue supposedly saw something they couldn't explain and never
Yeah.
talk about. And this guy saw something that he couldn't explain, but was willing to talk about with us. And he's
It's
like,
crazy.
ever since then, little weird things have happened. But other than that, it's just been another day, but that was the weirdest experience that I've ever had, and I cannot explain.
Wow.
But yeah, workers have been touched. They've seen things. That's part of their initiation after working 2 to 3 months or maybe a year. And a lot of the people that we spoke to, like they've had weird experiences. They either been touched or they've seen things, and they just continue to work because they love working there. That place is
Huh.
definitely filled with so many stories, but it's
Sure.
also, I feel like, a lot of energy that's just coming in and out. So it's hard
Oh
to
my God, yeah.
pinpoint what is there. Yeah. But we know for a fact that Scarlett Maglieri is definitely keeping an eye on things, and she's very happy with the way operations are being run.
I love that.
I know. So that is our story of the Count of Sunset and, of course, the hauntings of the Whiskey a Go-Go. If you guys have had any experiences at the Whiskey Rainbow Roxy Viper Room, let us know.
Yes.
And let us know if you caught a concert there. What was your memory of the Whiskey a Go-Go or the Sunset Strip? We love to hear them. You can email us at HollywoodParanormal@gmail.com or message us on Instagram at HollywoodParanormal. But we're definitely going to make that happen. I definitely want us to go back to the Rainbow to do a live recording and Q&A, of course, with the staff there. So
I'll bring my fedora.
Yes. All right, guys. So that is our episode. If you love Hollywood Paranormal, please give us a 5-4-star rating on Apple.
Five,
please. I think it's 5 or 4. So I think it's 5 stars, right?
Oh, I don't know.
It really helps us indie podcasters out a lot, especially when you write a little tidbit about us. It helps us become a little more visible because it's very congested out here in the streets.
Help us fight the algorithm.
I know. You can also message us and stalk us on Instagram and Facebook at Hollywood Paranormal. You can also visit our website at HollywoodParanormal.com. And of course, we are definitely going to be making another appearance, hopefully soon at the Parapod Festival in August. Yes. We got our email, so we'll be sending out messages for support and votes. So please keep an eye on that, of course.
4 more years.
I know. And please, if you have any ghost stories, message them to us at HollywoodParanormal@gmail.com. We love doing the Listener's Tales episodes, of course. And if you have a moment to spare, you could go to our Patreon and support the podcast for as little as $1 per month or however many months you wish to support us. We do appreciate each and every one of you. You can cancel any time, but it does help this Hollywood Paranormal train moving. If you go to patreon.com/Hollywood Paranormal, you'll be given access to our Saturday Night Ghost Club podcast, which is only exclusive for Patreon members, where you get to hear real ghost stories. You'll get to actually watch videos and you'll catch our next video of our Whiskey a Go-Go investigation. So where can people find your website to purchase tickets for your plays, Bryce?
Yes, they are not up yet. So currently they are very exclusive. No one can get them.
Oh my goodness.
When the time comes, actually in a couple, let me see, what is today? Today is the 24th. It will probably be on sale the week of the 12th, would be my guess. The 12th and the 19th, maybe the 12th. They will be, you can follow the theater group that I'm on the board, Firefly Theater Group on Instagram. It's theater with an R-E because we're pretentious. Or I always post it on my Instagram. So the link will be there. And the website Firefly Theater Group has tickets. They are currently not on sale, but soon to be on sale. And we're only running for 2 weekends, so get them while they're good.
Yes, guys, if you live in around the LA area, you want to see Bryce in action, you can.
And no pressure. I have people flying in from out of state. So even if you don't live in the LA area, you could really... You could really show up in a fedora and show me what's what.
Stop. Don't forget to wear your fedora. Guys, if you still own a fedora.
If I see a single fedora in that audience, I'm going to dump water on a ghost.
Oh my God, you'll be extra if you wear a fedora and cape, swear.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys, stay tuned for more episodes. We're going to be having our friend Ansley of Spooky Foodie come on board to talk more about Whiskey a Go-Go and the Rainbow.
Love
and
her.
Of course, Cantors. We still have to follow with her adventures. And we know that she's Hollyweird just like the rest of us, of course. All right, guys, take care. Stay weird, but most of all, stay Holly weird. Bryce, before we depart, do you have anything else you want to say?
Bye.
Hey, guys. Party.